The most dangerous thing in the woods isn't bears or boars. It's people. Every year, hunters, fishermen, campers, and hikers run into deranged individuals and deadly criminal elements. The stories are shocking, yet few know what's really going on. Join me, wildlife journalist Chester Moore, as we raise awareness to these issues and shed light on the dark outdoors. Welcome to Dark Outdoors. This is Chester Moore. And when I think of dark, creepy stuff in the great outdoors, I think of my friend Lyle Blackburn. He is an author. He's a researcher. He's a television star. He's done some production. And he has a new book called Sinister Swamps. And so to talk about disappearances and other mysterious stuff going on in the swamps of America, welcome, Lyle Blackburn.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, you know, I always love your books because you're such a thorough researcher. And when I saw you were doing something on swamps, I thought, I bet it's going to tie into some of the stuff I was wanting to do on this new podcast here. Because, you know, unfortunately, the whole theme of dark outdoors is someone asked me a few years back, what is the most dangerous thing in the woods? And without blinking, I said people. And of course, they were expecting me to say bears or boars or rattlesnakes, but it's people. And if you start looking across America, a lot of really heinous stuff is done down in swamps.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, you know, a place where you can find, you know, solitude and privacy. And, you know, it attracts people that want to get off the grid or that are doing things they shouldn't. So certainly swamps are notable in that. Oh, you know, you think of snakes and alligators and all this other stuff, but there's that aspect of it just being off the grid where bad people are out there doing bad things.
Yeah. So what was the inspiration behind the book? What made you think, you know what, we're going to write about all the crazy stuff in swamps?
Well, I think it's a little bit of just destiny and a little bit of just something that is just been a fascination of mine. Mm-hmm. Since I was a kid, you know, and I know you're right with me when we were watching stuff early on, like Scooby-Doo and monster movies, and it was always, you know, set in a swamp or the haunted, even a haunted house was always right next to the swamp.
For sure.
And, you know, quicksand and alligators and stuff. So I just kind of love that setting. And then, you know, growing up and getting into the outdoors and then eventually doing cryptid research, you know, oftentimes swamps were an epicenter for strange occurrences. So that kind of just developed from, you know, some research I was doing on cryptid sightings and many of them near swamps. I thought, wouldn't it be cool to just do a book that instead of, you know, revolved around a certain cryptid or a certain case, simply revolved around swamp locations, and then just whatever weird stuff and spooky stuff that happens in those swamps would be included.
Well, the one when I got the book, by the way, I've kind of looked through the book for the purposes of this program and found a lot of great reference. Look forward to digging deep into all of it because all of it's fascinating. But the one that drew me in first, just because of the title, and I've heard of it before, but I saw it in your book in bold, The Great Dismal Swamp. I mean, that just is a loaded title.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the name of it, it just conjures up the image of a dank, dark, brackish, spooky swamp, you know, so that certainly had to be in the book. And, you know, naturally, not surprisingly, when you look at the history of that swamp, there is every range of phenomenon from sightings of strange animals to stories of witches, to ghosts, you know, people, you know, being murdered in that area, just every sort of thing. So it matches, it lives up to its name, I should say.
Where is it located?
It's located in Virginia and North Carolina.
Know, you don't think of those areas if you're from like the Deep South or from Texas as having swamp, but there are swamps all over the nation in different forms.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, just take our home state of Texas. You know, nobody thinks that there's swamps here, but Texas boasts, miles of swamplands. And certainly all across the you know, deep south, there's a lot of drainage networks and things that are flowing to the Mississippi River. And, you know, those overflows and, you know, low elevation create these swamps. And in my book, you know, I tried to spread it out as much as I could across North America, but certainly mm-hmm. there's a large concentration of swamps in the south.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I live literally like a mile from a swamp here in Orange, Texas. So they're all over the place. But there are some strange cases of murders and bodies found in there. There was one in 1987 and another body found in 2015. So it seems like there is a history of some murder in that swamp.
Certainly. Yeah, there's a case in the Dismal Swamp back in mm-hmm. 1987, which a body was found there on the Virginia-North Carolina border. And, you know, when people throw a body into a swamp, you know, they intend it to disappear. Because mm-hmm. again, you know, rather than throwing it in some dry woods or something else, when you submerge a body or throw it in a swampy area with all that moisture and humidity mm-hmm. and rotting vegetation, they will disappear faster. But as we know, there's people out there strolling around, hiking and walking, and oftentimes come across these, you know, rather distressing sights of dead bodies. And that mm-hmm. was one where the body of a woman who had been shot was discarded in the swamp, and the investigators eventually solved the crime, which was fortunate, but yeah, just the spooky aspect of already walking through a swamp and then coming across a dead body is rather alarming.
Well, that's part of the reason, not only the idea of keeping people protected going into remote areas, or not even really remote, but just kind of, you know, out of the neighborhood, down in the woods somewhere, because of these nefarious people, but also the idea of, like, you know, what to do if you come across something like this. You know, when you're out in the middle of nowhere, you're expecting to, maybe you're going bird watching, you're going duck hunting, or you're going herping or whatever, you might come across some of this stuff. So I'm just trying to prepare people, because unfortunately it seems like this stuff is on the rise. And the Everglades, if you think of a swamp in America, basically you think of two, and they're both in your book. You think of the Everglades and Okefenokee. Those are kind of the two that are, and your take on that was fascinating, but the Everglades had so much stuff, but the one I couldn't take myself awake from was a guy named Edgar Watson. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Edgar Watson, that was a case in the Everglades where mm-hmm. a rather strange fella had moved into this area along the, let's see, I think it was a remote island of Chokoloskee. Everything in the Everglades.
Man, those Florida places are hard to pronounce.
They're all something Native American references. Yeah. But this guy kind of kept to himself, and he was raising pigs, hunting alligators, and growing sugar cane there along the Chatham River. And rumors started to emerge that some of his workers were going missing. As his mm-hmm. as his business began to thrive, he sort of had a plantation type mm-hmm. setup. And, you know, that's kind of like seasonal work. You know, people are
sure.
pulling the cane and processing it. And eventually someone found a skeleton floating in the swamp near his home. And then the locals really started to question what was going on, and he, mm-hmm. you know, questioned Edgar Watson about this. And of course he dismissed it as, oh, you know, it's probably a Native American skeleton. You know, there's a lot of those around here. It's nothing. But eventually, you know, some workers who people knew that had been working at his plantation were found dead. Then it intensified, and he was eventually confronted, and basically a posse of townsfolk, you know, sort of the villagers with pitchforks, shot this guy. And, you know, no one really had any proof necessarily that he was killing off his workers in order to avoid paying them, but, you know, mm-hmm. circumstantial evidence added up. And so that story sort of became, you know, legendary and mythical proportions of this bizarre and heinous individual that lived in the swampy environments and would dispose of people by, you know, dumping their bodies to be eaten by alligators. And those are the kind of things that, you know, just build up this legend and lore of the swamps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But always, you know, they're based upon truth. This was a real guy, and this, you know, there was real dead bodies. So you never really know.
And there continue to be dead bodies. In 1977 at Alligator Alley, there were four bodies found. I believe they were found by Native American hikers or something like that.
Right. Yeah, there's a place called Alligator Alley that cuts through the Everglades. And, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, it sounds dangerous from alligators, but really it's some of the most disturbing things are the result of crimes. And there was four mm-hmm. bodies discovered near there in 1977 by a group of Native Americans who were hiking in the woods. Mm-hmm. And they found that these remains of people, they could see bullet holes in the head. Mm-hmm. You know, they found parts of their possessions laying in and around there, and eventually found a couple of more skeletons. So after they informed the authorities, you know, authorities finding several bodies in the one location, they felt it could be the work of a serial killer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but that's the thing, you know, when you're talking about the swamp, it's hard to say, did these people just, you know, go missing? Did they encounter somebody in the swamp that killed them in the swamp, or were they just deposited there? And certainly, yeah. I guess in many ways, the swamp kind of cloaks and obscures what really happened. And this is another case where just bodies were being found in the Everglades.
Yeah, I had William Ramsey on from William Ramsey Investigates about the Smiley Face Killers, because that kind of falls in our domain here, because these bodies are found in water, but they have no evidence of actually dying in water, most of them. And the water seems to be solvent, you know, so if someone wants to go out into a remote location, dispose of a body. And I think about Florida, the late 70s, I mean, this could be something from the cocaine wars back then and just throw them in the swamp, or they encountered somebody there. So there's always that thing to consider. You might not find a serial killer out there, but you could find yourself where someone's trying to dispose of a body or deal with a situation, or kind of like a casino when they drug Joe Pesci out into the cornfield. You know, you never know right. what you may find out in these areas.
Right. Creepy cornfields. But, you know, and that's one thing that I thought, it kind of put this in perspective on just how many bodies are probably out there and not found. You know, we have the stories yeah. of the ones that were, but in my research, both with the Everglades and the Okefenokee Swamp, there is plausible evidence to suggest that the old Flight 19, the squadron that disappeared mm-hmm. in the 1940s, you know, everybody kind of thought, oh, those went disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. But there is, you know, pretty good compelling data to suggest that they might have crash landed in wow. either Okefenokee or the Everglades, and thus were never found. So if wow. if a swamp can swallow up five wow. Avenger torpedo aircraft, you know, your chances of finding a body that's dumped out there are very slim.
Yeah, there's no telling how many bodies. That's a great point. I remember watching, I think, an Unsolved Mysteries on that thing years and years ago. It's always been an interesting case, the Lost Squadron. And maybe there's a, you know, some kind of a Bermuda Triangle there in the swamps. There's also been some missing people that have just never been found, that there's no body. Just they went missing from campsites. I think one of them was named Roger Sawyer.
Right. That was a case in the Everglades National Park near Flamingo, mm-hmm. in which Roger Sawyer and his wife and family members went out there to camp. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a popular campground. And she went up to the visitor's center, you know, in the late afternoon. And as she was checking in, and he stayed out and, you know, was poking around in the park. Well, you know, they later assembled at their motorhome and realized, where's Roger? You know, mm-hmm. he should have been back. Well, where did he go? I mean, we were just hanging out here in the park. And, you know, obviously they started looking around and found no trace of him. This was, he was 67 years old, but he was an experienced outdoorsman. He was in good health, of sound mind, and, you know, wasn't somebody who would just wander off, especially with his family being there. But, you know, this escalated to the Miami-Dade Fire Rescue Department came out, the U.S. Park Service, and they launched an initial search, which lasted through the evening and into the next day in that vicinity, and they found no sign of him at all. Mm-hmm. And then continued to, you know, widen the net and search for 10 days and could find no trace of him and no explanation where he could have gone. I mean, it was just like he was there 1 minute and simply disappeared. So you're thinking, you know, what could have happened to this guy? Certainly there are, you know, treacheries that could befall you if you wander too far off, but it just didn't seem like something that he would have done without telling somebody, hey, I'm going to hike off into the swamp way down there. Mm-hmm. You know, just a really bizarre case of the missing persons.
Well, I like the part of your research there that says that there was a, you know, 10 days of search. So this wasn't just kind of like, we're going to look around for him and this guy ran off with a woman somewhere or something like that and left his wife or something. They had reason to believe, obviously, that something crazy happened or he got hurt or something. And 10 days of looking, you know, if there was sign there, you think they would have found it by then. So those are always, to me, some of the ones that make you feel the most uncomfortable.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if they would have found a body and, you know, he had been bitten by a snake or he had fallen and injured himself and drowned in the brackish waters or something, at least you would feel more comfortable. But the fact that he goes missing that easily from at the edge of a park, you know, a place where there's people going in and out every day. Your mind starts to wonder what in the world could have happened to this guy. And that's kind of compounded because just 5 months later, another guy went missing in this very same area.
Oh, wow.
In this Everglades National Park. They found a truck belonging to a guy named Tracy Oliver, who was incidentally from Texas. And, you know, he had conceivably gone off into the swamp. And it was the same kind of thing, you know, massive search, 40 or 50 people, helicopters, tracking dogs, combing the mangrove mazes, never found this guy, just completely missing and kind of spooky considering 5 months apart from Roger Sawyer's disappearance.
And when you're talking about a national park, the National Park Service actually has their own police departments and their own wardens and things like that. So it's a very rigid law enforcement that goes into a national park system. So obviously that they were looking and they were, you know, it wasn't like a, you know, out in the country somewhere and maybe a small police department. So there's a lot of going on in these areas. And when you have this kind of comb over and nothing happens, that definitely adds the chill to the spine, you know. But out of all the things in your book that put chill down my spine, it was a case from 2014 in Bear Creek Swamp in Alabama that involved dolls.
Right. Yeah, that one's kind of spooky. This Bear Creek Swamp, I mean, it's, you know, a area of dark and remote woods and swamplands, you know, has a long history of strangeness that surrounds it, from people seeing phantom cars, from ghostly encounters, you know, even some rumors of Bigfoot in the area. So it's one of those places where it already has that kind of ominous air of high strangeness. Well, in 2014, Bear Creek actually made the national news when when somebody came across 21 creepy looking dolls that were staged, basically visible from a road sitting there in the swamp. And it was actually a deputy law enforcement officer that noticed it while driving on a dirt road through that swamp. And they looked kind of like antique dolls. They had pale faces mm-hmm. and tattered clothing. Mm-hmm. And he could see that they were impaled atop bamboo stakes. Now, it was visible from the road, but you couldn't immediately get to it because there was swampy water, you know, between the road and the location of these dolls. So they were just sort of over there. Well, you know, there was some photos taken, and this is the kind of thing where if it leaks to the news, you know, it's all over the place. Spooky dolls found in swamp. I mean, this is a quintessential swamp, you know, mystery.
Yes.
And, you know, automatically brings to mind, you know, things of, you know, either, you know, witches, you know, satanic rituals, strange people living in the swamp. You know, what was the significance of these dolls placed there? Even if it was simply a prank, it was a rather spooky one. So, you know, the authorities, you know, asked around, tried to get to the bottom and find out if there was something sinister going on or whether this was a prank. And they never could determine who had left these. So they finally just got some canoes and paddled out to this location and, you know, removed the dolls. But they were like old porcelain dolls, you know. They looked like they had been treated with some white spray paint, possibly to look even more creepy. But like so many of these swamp mysteries, there was just simply no explanation, but one that, you know, made it around social media. And if you search creepy dolls Bear Creek Swamp, it's still going to come up. And I see occasionally people still discussing this case.
Well, to quote a Richard Pryor joke that I can put on the air, he talked about going to the voodoo lady's house in this long story. And he said, when this monkey came out that had one hand and she had a monkey's foot necklace on, he said, that's when I put my hand on my knife. And that, you know, and that's kind of when you see the dolls impaled in the swamp, that's when you put your hand on the knife.
Oh, yeah. And I'm telling you, you know, as somebody who, you know, you go into these type places, you know, if I see a hog or, you know, a couple of big hogs in my vicinity, I'm prepared. You know, they're unpredictable. You know, sure. Or if I'm canoeing along, I see a, you know, 12-foot alligator, you know, moseying by the canoe, I kind of keep my arms in. But if I go out there and I see a 21 creepy dolls, yeah, hand's going on the knife, the other hand's going on the gun, and I'm getting the hell out of there. I'm gone.
Exactly, man. Because there's either a banjo coming soon or, you know, some guy with a potato sack on his head. You know, I mean, it's not good. You know, and the reason that I go back to doing this whole new program is because of all the dangerous crap I've encountered in the woods over the years, from me and my dad getting chased off of a mountain near Willow Creek, California in 2002, very close to where they filmed the Murder Mountain series, actually. We know that was drug pushers that did it, to finding two different meth labs here, and one in the Sabine and one on the Angelina kind of area. Now, I didn't go look for the meth in there, but I kind of figured out what it was real quick and got out of Dodge, you know, and to coming across all kind of crazy stuff. I'm thinking, if Chester Moore by himself can come across all this nuts stuff, other people are too. And I know by the grace of God, I've survived some of these things. And that's why I appreciate you sharing this. And there's a definitely entertaining value to, like, you know, it's kind of like gathering by the campfire, right? And you're telling creepy stories. But there's also a part of just letting people be aware that, look, nature's beautiful. But sometimes there's some people in here that ain't so beautiful and they got bad intentions. And to be careful of those things. Now, all of your adventures, and whether you're doing cryptid research or out in the swamp paddling around researching for this book, have you ever come across a situation where you thought, you know what, I better not go any further?
Yeah, there's been a few. I mean, there was once where I found some skulls that seem to be purposefully arranged. You know, you find skulls in the woods, you know, there were hog skulls, and but they looked as if they had been placed there in a particular pattern by a person, which again, you know, coming across hog sign or hogs or hog skulls is not a problem. But when you start thinking, okay, what, you know, why is this like this? And are there people living nearby? That just gave me the creeps and, you know, sort of a steer clear. Let's just kind of move on from this area. And then there's been a few times where I've come across abandoned structures that, you know, they weren't completely dilapidated, but someone could have been in there. You know, and those are the, you know, you think Ted Kaczynski or, you know, Unabomber living in a shack. Exactly. You know, why are these people, you know, why is this way out here? And, you know, those are definitely, I'm not going to knock on that door because I don't
know.
I don't know what kind of person could be in there. I just, you know, I'm just going to move the other way. So, the, you know, those kind of incidents are the ones that are, like you say, just really give you the creeps up and above just, you know, the normal, you know, sundown in a swamp or something.
Well, Lyle, if someone wants to order your book, I mean, where can they get the book and all the books you have? You got them on, I know you have them on Amazon, but you also sell them direct or signed books or anything like that?
Yeah. You can get all my books on Amazon, you know, paperback, hardback, Kindle versions. And you can also get those direct from my online store, which is monstrobizarro.com. You can find links to these from my website at lyleblackburn.com.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to end with a story that you and I can both appreciate because it's someone that we both knew. The first time I ever went to one of the most famous swamps in North America, Boggy Creek, there in southwestern Arkansas, I went with Smokey Crabtree, the legend of Boggy Creek fame, and me and my dad went down into part of the swamp. He was going to show us a place where they filmed his son Travis paddling out in the swamp, kind of a historic site of the movie. And Smokey, you know, was a little guy. You know, he's about 5'6", 5'7", maybe, you know. And he pulls a .357 out with like a 9-inch barrel. And he straps it on himself. He sees me looking at him with this gun. He looks at me in that real slow southern drawl and says, "Chester, this ain't for the monster. It's for the people out here."
Yes, precisely. And you know, Smokey, in my mind, is one of the most experienced outdoorsmen I've ever met. Just a skilled hunter, tracker, fisherman, lived in the woods. Whatever things he suggests, I'm following. So if he's carrying a gun, I'm thinking there's a good reason for that.
Absolutely, man. Well, we appreciate your time, Lyle, and thank you for your awesome book. And thanks for coming on Dark Outdoors. If you would like to share your dark outdoor story, email Chester at chestermore.com. If you would like a PDF file of my personal survival tips, put survival in the subject line. Read my wildlife writings and follow my Higher Calling Wildlife and Higher Calling Gulf Coast podcast at highercalling.net. Remember, never enter the wild without prayer and preparation.